introduce our speakers because I overheard that they have a highly intricate choreography down here. So our speakers tonight are Robin and Trudy. You guys go.
Okay. Get my timer started because I am the talker. Hi, my name is Trudy.
Hi, Trudy.
And I also would like to welcome the newcomers. You are the lifeblood of this organization, or fellowship. It's not really an organization, fellowship. I grew up in an alcoholic home. Both of my parents were raised by alcoholics. And it's not so much that the drinking isn't what bothered me. As a child, I didn't understand the drinking. What bothered me was the criticism, the ridicule, the teasing, the lack of hugs, the lack of nurturing, I would say. My parents were they encouraged us, but I didn't interpret that encouragement that way. I saw it as I wasn't good enough. If I brought B's home, they should have been A's. If I cleaned the room, something was found that wasn't quite right. I was shown how I could do it better. And there's nothing wrong with that, except that I tended to be a very sensitive person, and I took it as I wasn't good enough. My dad was always right. I wanted to be right. Once. So, in trying to achieve that, at the dinner table, he would talk about his work and how stupid the inspectors were and how stupid the people he worked with were, and I would talk about how stupid my teacher was. No, that did not go over at all, as I was in a parochial school. He was paying good money, and those had better be good teachers. So that didn't work out. If we needed to, you know, sometimes we'd say, my dad was a construction worker, he was an electrician. He worked hard, he provided well for us. But when he got home from work, he sat in his chair and he drank a quart of beer, maybe 2 quarts. I don't know, we just poured it for him. I hear from my brothers and sisters, they all sipped from it. I never did that. I don't know what that's about. I was the oldest. I'm the oldest of 9 kids. Somebody understands that. Thank you. It's a lot of work to be the oldest of 9 kids. It's a lot of work. Because it's back in the time when we didn't have a dryer. We had a washer, which was very lucky, but we didn't have a dryer. And in my family, there's my brother and I were 18 months apart, and then there was a 3-year gap, and then there were 4 girls 1 year apart. And when they got into diapers, and there was no dryer, and we don't have those throwaway diapers, okay? So I could fill all 5 lines of clothesline with diapers. And then they had to be taken down. That was in the morning. And in the evening, when you came home from school, you had to take them down. Then you had to fold them. Then you had to put them away. And that was just the diapers. There was all everybody's clothes, you know, the towels. Anyway. Let's see, where was I? Growing up, it was really very good training. I learned how to be good at whatever I did. The problem was that one time when my dad and I were fighting about what a compass was, I didn't even say anything yet. It's the kind that has the point and the other side has a pencil. Okay. So he said that was not a compass. And I went and looked it up in the dictionary like he always told us to do. Dad, how do you spell?
Look it up in the dictionary.
So I looked up in the dictionary. There's a picture of it. Took him the dictionary. I said, Dad, this is what I'm talking about. Dictionary's wrong. say is that as a child, it left me feeling that I couldn't trust myself. I couldn't count on myself, because what I was thinking could be wrong. But yet I knew he was wrong, but I couldn't prove that. You know, it was very confusing. And I got out on my own, but what happened is I adopted all of his ways. When I went out as an adult, I was arrogant, self-righteous, and domineering. My way or the highway. And I have pretty good verbal skills. So for some people who are shy or don't have those, I could domineer with ease. It works. Getting a job, that is very helpful. I was able to get employment without a college degree. I never felt smart enough to go to college. I barely made it through high school. And I think there was just some concentration problems because there's a lot of noise in the house with that many people. I made it through high school, but while I was that arrogant, self-righteous person, I also didn't know how to say no to men. Dad issues, you know. And I thought that I didn't have any problems with women till I ran into the ones who are more arrogant, more self-righteous, and more domineering than me. And then I found out, oh, I have trouble with them too. So work went well for me. I was able to provide for myself. I wasn't doing too good in the relationship department. I just couldn't keep them. I was always telling them what to do, how to do it, and when to do it, and how they weren't doing it right, and you know, I couldn't keep them. So I met and married Robin, and I won't go into all of that. Let me check my time. Okay. And the first year, 8 years of our marriage was a honeymoon. We were doing a lot of traveling, we were newly married, buying a house, good stuff. However, what was going on in those 8 years was I wasn't feeling heard, which is a big problem I had at home too, growing up. And I didn't know how to show any vulnerability. I knew how to show anger. And I could tell Robin in many different languages what he was doing wrong and how wrong he was doing it. But I didn't really have any compassion. And that ate into our relationship. And then we had the 8 years from hell, where we weren't being kind to each other, didn't know what was wrong, but we're still trying to figure it out. He tried to pack a bag and leave one time, and I took the bag out of his hands and threw it on the bed and said, "You're not going anywhere." He might tell you about that. And that's not the way to do it, but fortunately for us, he stuck around and we were able to get into therapy. I drug him to couples therapy because he had the problem. And she proceeded to tell me that he may have a problem, but yours is worse. You guys are good laughers. So it was Al-Anon at least once a week, and we were to see her twice a week. We were so bad. I think I was also, I had a little bit of counseling through the program at work, and that person went into private practice, and when our couples therapy said, "You need an individual, your very own therapist." I said, "Why?" "He's got the problem, why?" And now this is not a drinker. He's not my drinker. He's not a drinker. He has other addictive issues, but it's not drinking. And so I did go see that other therapist as an individual, and I worked very hard along with Al-Anon. And I'm going to stop there and let Robin talk to you for a few minutes, and then I'll come back with my Al-Anon story.
Hello, my name is Robin.
Hi, Robin.
And I'm a very grateful member of the Al-Anon family program. My story starts when I was very young. Imagine that. I was the apple of my mom's eye. This was back at the beginning of the Second World War. Anyway, she took me everywhere. She took me shopping. She took me to the swimming pool. She took me... anybody here remember Bimini Baths? Hey! One. I'm not the only person. Anyway, she would take me all these places, and then my dad got drafted. And we moved in with my grandparents. So this meant that I went from number one to one of about 13. And when I say about 13, there was my grandparents, my great-grandmother, a 14-year-old aunt, an uncle that's my age, an aunt and her two daughters, and my mom and her three kids in a 1,100-square-foot house in South Central Los Angeles.
Wow.
I would have been happy if I could have been a number. Instead, I was just the kid who did things for attention. Actually, I did a lot of things for attention. I had a hero. I don't know how many of you will remember in the LA Times, on Sundays they used to have Prince Valiant on the cover of the Sunday Times. That was my hero. One day, I took two pieces of lath. I'm not even going to ask if anybody knows what that is. But it's wood. And I made a sword. And I was Prince Valiant. And I was walking down the alley behind the house. And I saw the dragon. An orange, fire-breathing dragon. And I attacked and defeated that dragon. When the man who owned this summer squash plant got home and discovered it, he was going to take it to the Pomona Fair.
Oh, no.
Well, that was one of the ways that I got attention. As a result, my grandmother beat me with wooden coat hangers every day for something either I did or was thinking about doing. I got a couple of those. As a result of all this, I have a fear of women. I have a fear of speaking. I stuttered. I stuttered very badly. And I cried at the drop of a hat. And I was 5 years old. When my folks finally left and bought their own home out in Monrovia, I was 10, and I swore three things. I was going to change my name because being a Robin is like being a boy named Sue. I fought everybody from one end of the earth to the other. The second thing, I was not going to stutter. And the third thing was I was not going to cry. Well, I got to school and I decided I wasn't going to be a Robin, so I used my middle name, which is Ralph. And I'm sitting in class and the teacher says, "Ralph, would you answer this question?" I didn't know who she was talking about. My name has been Robin for 10 years. I don't know who Ralph is. So that didn't work. But then when it came to stuttering, I had to figure out, how on earth do I not stutter? I discovered that if you talk real, real slow, people will get anxious and finish your sentences. Yeah. So I didn't have to talk. I would start and they would finish it. There were some other things that I had to do, most of which I don't remember, but I overcame the stuttering. The last thing I was going to figure out was how not to cry. I would cry if you yelled at me. I would cry if I felt sad. I would cry if I felt happy. To this day, if I go to a movie, I cry. Trudy will look over at me and want to know, what's going on? So I got 1 out of 3. I didn't figure that was too bad. I learned that I could leave. I could run away when things got bad. I could just pick up and leave. When I was about 7, living down in South Central Los Angeles, I decided I would run away, so I took my little handkerchief and I saw it on, and I made me a stick with the thing on it and over my shoulder. And I walked down, I lived on 76th Street, I walked down to Figueroa, but that's too big a street, I couldn't cross that, so I made a right-hand turn and I went up to 75th. And I turned back the other way, and there's Broadway, and that's too big, I couldn't cross that. So then I came back down to 76th. Well, now I'm back home again. So I went back to 75th, sat on the corner, and I sat there until somebody came and got me. And when I got home, I got a coat hanger on my backside for running away and causing them to worry. So when we get out to Monrovia, and I'm kind of a big man on campus at high school, I'm playing football, I belong to the elite clique, I'm not very smart, I'm not getting good grades, but I got a good core of guys that back me up. I guess they'd call it a gang today, we called it a club back then. And we didn't do anything in particular except have parties. And I learned that if things went wrong, I could run to one of my buddy's houses and stay there. And one day, I'm having an argument with my mom, and I pushed her, and she sat down on the couch. Now, I knew that this was not a good thing when my dad got home. Now, my dad was a policeman in Los Angeles, and he worked nights. And he worked the streets on the black and white. He just drove around and handled kids. And so the next day he says to me, you can't push your mother around like that. You have to respect her. I said, this house is too small for us. Somebody's got to be in charge, and I don't like who's in charge, and I want to change it. My dad's about this tall. Weighed 180 pounds, soaking wet. I was 5'10 and a half, 225, playing football, thought I ruled the world. He says, why don't we go to the police academy and we'll determine who's gonna be the ruler of this house? I said, yes, I am into this. So we go to the police academy, we put on our sweat clothes, and we go up in the exercise room. And he says to me, what do you want to do? Let's just fight. Let's get this over with. Okay, he says. He turned me every way but loose. I hurt in places I didn't know existed. I mean, I'd been pummeled on a football field and all that kind of stuff, and I never hurt like this. So I figured, I'm going to report him to the police. So the next day, I get up and I go in the bathroom and I take off my pajamas and I'm looking for the wounds. There's not a mark. A lot of pain, I hurt, but there's not a mark. So I figured, well, I can't do this, so I joined the Navy. 2 weeks after high school, I was in San Diego in boot camp. And I had a little, what would you call it? A little go around with one of the seamen on board ship. And so I changed ships. And they asked me, when my time was up, would you like to re-up? You know, you're the kind of guy we want. I made second class in 3 years, and I was kind of the guy that they wanted. And I said, no, I'm leaving here. So I left there and went to the police department. The nice thing about the police department is there are about 500 jobs. If you don't like this one, or if you have a problem here, you go to here. If you have a problem there, you go over here. And I did that. I moved around because that's what I do. When things go wrong, that's what I do. Am I out of time?
Almost.
Oh, good. I lost my train of thought. I did lose my thought.
I'll tell you. You're awesome.
I came home from work one day, and Trudy and I got into an argument. Oh, I remembered where I wanted to go. I got married, and not to her. I married this woman, and we had 3 kids, and we never had a fight. For 8 years. And after 8 years, we had a fight. And I ran away. I wrote her a letter, and I left. Now, I'm still friends with her, but she does not have a clue why I left. She only has what she thinks and what was in the letter that I wrote her. And it was a one-page letter. I was wandering around, and I met Trudy. I was going to school because I couldn't pay for my divorce, and I needed some money. And my partner says, why don't you go to school on the GI Bill? They'll pay you $400 a month to go to school. Well, I was making $400 a month as a cop. It costed me $440 to survive with all the child support and paying all the other kind of stuff. So I went to school. They gave me $400 a month. And I went to this first aid class, required class. And there's this good-looking lady sitting in the middle of the room. So I sat down next to her, and I tried to talk to her, and she ignored me. Well, that was on Wednesday. So on Thursday, I go back for a history class. And there she is again in the same chair. So I sat down next to her, and she still wouldn't talk to me. And she didn't talk to me for 3 months. One day, we were having a work experience class, and I mean, there's probably 300 people in this auditorium. And she gets up and she starts to walk out. I could see her down below. I'm up in the balcony making a lot of noise with my buddies. So I ran down to the front of the balcony, I leaned over and I said, hey, you want to go out for coffee? She says, what does your last name start with? And I said, R. She says, nope, I'm an E and I'm out of here. And she left. However, she did go out with me a short time later, and a year later, she even got suckered into marrying me. And at that point, I'll give her back to her.
Who got suckered? No. As I think I said, we did have 8 great years, but what I wasn't realizing is that little things were building, little wounds, little tiny wounds were building up, and I didn't. The only way I knew how to express them was through anger, and it wasn't even anger. I have to be honest. It was rage. It was rage, rage, rage. I still have the flamethrower, but it is turned off, so you're all safe tonight. But I just had so much rage, and there was a fella came to work with us, and he was just like my father, and he was trying to get romantic, and here I was married, and it just stressed me out. And we didn't have harassment things back then. We didn't have that. We had to deal with it as best we could, but it did cause me to basically flip out. I'll tell you one quick story. I worked for the County of Los Angeles. I went from my dysfunctional family to the County of Los Angeles, and I was going to save them. Oh God, I was going to save them. And so I was working at the mechanical department. And that's where they fix all the cars. And they have these big bay doors. You know, they roll up and they roll down. And this fella that reminded me of my father, we were in the parking lot arguing. How silly. All of a sudden the bay doors start going down. They didn't want to hear us. They didn't want to hear it. It sounded like a married couple arguing out in the parking lot. Me telling him what to do. So shortly after that, I got some serious help. And I got to Al-Anon. And the first meeting back in 1992, when I finally got that car into that parking lot and got it parked, because I didn't have a problem. You know, it wasn't me. I was suffering, but it wasn't me. It was because of him. And I got out of that car and I walked to the door. They had a sign on their door that said, Al-Anon, we care. Oh, I needed somebody to care about me. I was not feeling cared about. And back in 92, the meeting, I was going to a daytime meeting, so it was a lot of wives of alcoholics. And I thought, boy, I'm in the wrong place. Because as you tell your story, what's on your mind, you know, what the alcoholic's doing comes up. And I'm thinking, oh shit, I'm sorry. Those are the things I'm doing. I must be in the wrong room, but I don't drink. You know, I was very confused for a while, very confused. You know what? What I've learned is that kept coming back. That's the one thing I'm good at. I keep coming back. What I learned was, don't look at the differences. Look for the similarities. I was looking at the differences. That's how I grew up. I had to know where the differences were so that I didn't make a mistake, because I couldn't take the criticism, because I would blow the flames. And that's embarrassing and shameful, and I wanted to be different. I wanted to do it right. I didn't know what right was, but I wanted to do it right, because the way I was doing it wasn't right. I made the decision not to have children because I didn't want to do to them what was done to me. And by age 50, I finally felt emotionally ready to have kids. But not physically. I'm not doing it at 50. So I knew, but going into that first meeting, that's where the care, and they were loving people. And I did hear similarities, enough to keep me coming back. What I had to work on was a higher power. I had religion, and when I left home at 18, I left my religion. So I had God. I knew about God. And I had religion, but I didn't know about spirituality. I had no clue what that meant. I was attending a meeting, and a gal's husband had committed suicide, and she and her child were now in a worse situation, and she was expressing this at the meeting. And she was like, how could God do this to us? And I was like, yeah, where's the love? Where's the, you know? And another lady raised her hand and she said, to no one in particular, she just shared, when tragic things happen, God sheds the first tear. And I thought, he does? God cries? Not the God I knew. All he did was tell me what I was doing wrong. He did not ever cry. God cries? I knew he laughed at us, you know, but that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was to hear that God shed the first tear when tragedy happens. And I was, from that moment, that was what I call my spiritual awakening in that moment. And it's only grown and gotten better through all of your sharings about your higher powers. The other thing that happened is that I was able to have a relationship with my father through this program. You taught me how to accept him the way he was, how to love him the way he was. When he died, I had no regrets. No regrets at all. I wish if he could have lived to 200 years, I think we could have worked things out. But maybe we'll get another chance at that. This program has taught me gratitude. Somebody asked me when I first started speaking, what do you think what's the biggest thing you got from this program? I didn't know. But I thought about it. I talked about it with my sponsor. I talked about it with other people. What was the biggest thing they got from the program? I listened in meetings, and I finally figured out, for me, it was gratitude. Gratitude is what I got. I was the type of person that could walk into a room and I could tell you everything wrong with that room. I could look at a person and I can tell you everything wrong with that person. But I couldn't tell you what was right. I was just brought up in the negatives. I sometimes refer, and this is a bit harsh, so take this with a grain of salt, but I sometimes refer to my upbringing as being in a concentration camp, because I never knew when the bullet was going to come. And it wasn't really like that, but as a kid, sometimes it can feel like that. You just don't know when they're going to explode, when they're going to come after you, or it feels like they're coming after you. My dad never touched us. He had a violent father, and he certainly could have been violent. I know he got into bar fights. I know that much, but not with us. He punched a few holes in the wall in the house, and that was scary. Those were scary times. But not as scary as what I've heard in these rooms. And I'm just so grateful that you keep teaching me. I never stop learning in these rooms. The gratitude, even gratitude, I can still learn more about gratitude. I just love gratitude. Today I'm happy. Today I have few expectations. Today I'm still working on judging. I do have some issues still with judgment of people, things, and places. But so much better. So much better. I think Robin's going to be able to tell you that it's a little better. He was always understanding. He hung in there. Except for the one time he packed the suitcase, but you know, he put it down, so it's okay. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Rob and let him finish his story.
Trudy mentioned that we were going to counseling. And I didn't like the counselor. I didn't like her because one day walking down the street, we saw her, and I said hi, and she put up her nose and turned her head away. Like all I was good for was the paycheck. But she did one thing for us. She said, "You guys have to go to Al-Anon." What's that? Well, it's this program, and you know, here's a book, and find a meeting. And so I found a meeting not too far from where I live, and I went to the meeting. And I don't want to offend anybody, but there were eight little old ladies sitting around a table crocheting. They didn't say hi to me. I didn't say hi to them. They took a break. We came back. They're crocheting. And the meeting is over, and nobody has said anything to me. So I went back to our counselor, and I said, "I'm not doing that. Those people are not, they don't even talk to you." "No, you got to find another meeting." Different day, different location, same eight little old ladies. And they're still crocheting. I went back and I said, "I'm not doing this." She said, "Yes, you are. You're going to find a meeting." So I found a men's meeting. Yay for a men's meeting. It's in San Marino. I walked in the door. A gentleman got up, walked all the way around the room, met me at the door, and threw his arms around me. And I'm like this. Threw his arms around me and said, "We've been waiting for you." That was enough to get me to come back. And that was in 1991. And I still go to that meeting. I sometimes wonder, Trudy made mention of the fact of, what do I get out of these meetings? I've asked myself that question two or three times. And what I learned was from this book, One Day at a Time, on page 240, if you've never read it, it's where you're going to find that you don't have to be a victim, that you don't have to take offense. I thought that was pretty cool, that I don't have to be a victim, that I don't have to take whatever you say to me to heart, because I sucked it up like a sponge before. I tried to get a hold of a copy of Courage to Change. I left mine home, but on page 182, it tells the story of a man walking through the woods, and as he's approaching a brook, he hears a child talking. And the child is saying, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. And the guy says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm praying." "You're not praying, you're saying the alphabet." "No, I'm praying. I don't have the words, so I give God the letters and he puts them together." That's how I learned to pray. To just give God the words and he'll put them together. I never knew that. I wasn't really sure what a higher power was. I'm like Trudy. I was raised in a religion. I had religion up to here. And I knew that if I did something wrong, I was going to hell in a handbag. But I didn't understand. When I got to these meetings, everybody kept talking about their higher power this, higher power that. What encouraged the change on page 211, it explained it to me so that I could understand it. It was in simple terms, and I could understand. In Hope for Today, I discovered that it's important. Now, I knew I loved the hug I got when I got there. I understood I loved that hug. But I didn't understand the value of the touch of that hug until I read page 175 in Hope for Today, and it explained it to me. I'm thinking, wow, this is really great. They got some good stuff in these books. But I needed a way to deal with my anger, because I was one angry individual. I couldn't argue with Trudy. I lost. She's a woman. I lose to women, hands down. I lost to my grandmother. I lost to my mother. I lose to my sisters. I lost to my first wife. I lose to Trudy. If it's a verbal argument, and I have a master's degree in communication, if it's a verbal argument with a woman, I lose. But I needed some way to deal with that anger. Page 319 will tell you how to handle that. And you know what it tells you to do? Use the steps. Now, there's a novel experience for you. Use the steps. I got a pilot's license in 1984. And as a result of that, Trudy and I will go and watch airplanes land. And I don't know if you've ever watched an airplane land in a storm, but instead of coming in like this, they come in like this, because they have to keep the nose of the airplane into the wind. And I got to thinking, when they taught me how to land an airplane in a storm or a heavy wind or something of that nature that wasn't normal, they taught me, look at the runway. There's a line down the runway. Focus on the runway and make the adjustments to the airplane that you learned how to fly, and you'll be all right. And I got to thinking, isn't that kind of like following the steps? When the storms of doubt, fear, anger come crashing down upon you, do you focus on the things that are around you? Do you worry about the storm? Do you worry about the doubt? Do you worry about the fear? Do you spend all your time thinking about those things? Or do you find the runway and head straight for the runway and make the appropriate adjustments as you come in to land? Because if you'll keep your focus on the runway, which I call the steps, keep your focus on the steps, one at a time, especially the first three. Somebody once told me, how soon do I get to graduate out of the first three? He says, you never get out of the first three. You might do the other ones, but the Al-Anon waltz is forever. As soon as something goes wrong, as soon as something goes wrong, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, and your life gets back in order. I was talking to a young man. I'm watching it. They told me I had to quit it at 25 after, so you guys could get out of here. That was. Does anybody here ever fly a kite?
Yeah.
What keeps the kite up? The wind? What happens if you're flying a kite and you let go of the string? The kite will crash. Well, my idea of living my life is, I'm a kite. Around me is winds and rain and storms blowing me every which way, but I have something to hang on to called the steps. And if you'll hang on to the steps, like you hang on to the string when you fly a kite, your life will be much better. And as Trudy says, you can even be happy. Thanks for letting us be here. Thank you.